This is the Colgrave Seabrook Foundation podcast in association with Hawk Week, the industry's leading trade title.
This podcast is brought to you with the help of our sponsor, More People, the market leaders for professional recruitment across the UK and internationally. They specialise in horticulture, fresh produce, food, agriculture and garden and leisure sectors. For more information, please visit morepeople.co.uk.
Teamwork within this industry is vital. You really do need to be part of a team and really motivate each other within that team.
I'm Neville Stein, one of the trustees of the Colgrave Seabrook Foundation. We know it's quite hard to find good information about horticultural careers, which is why we made this podcast. My guest today on the Cultivate Your Future podcast is Phil Tremaine. He's one of the most important landscaping figures in the UK, and his role at the moment is as General Manager of the Association of Professional Landscapers, a trade body that really helps develop landscaper skills and helps them grow their market share. Given Phil's immense experience in the UK landscaping sector, it was a great opportunity for me to catch up with him and find out more about the sector and also to learn about what careers are available there in landscaping. Phil, can you give me some examples of some horticulturally specific landscape construction jobs and maybe some landscaping jobs that predominantly involved, you know, hard landscaping type materials, more traditional construction?
A good example of a horticultural job would actually be the Tower of London project that was taken up by Lambform Consultants Limited. Of course, around the Tower of London, traditionally it was just a moat. And it was a protected moat as well, obviously English heritage and everything involved in that. So it was a major project. But what they did was they turned it into a wildflower meadow. It was a massive colour throughout the spring and summer of last year, where you could walk down in through the wildflowers and walk into the moat and across bridges across the moat. It was a very sustainable project, a very biodiverse project, and a great thing for London as a whole, and became a very big visitor attraction. From a construction point of view, if we use the same company again, they performed the new part of the gardens at Wisley. They constructed that. Now, again, there was an enormous amount of planting there, obviously with it being an RHS site. But there was also an enormous amount of hard landscape construction of pathways and patios and walking and seating areas, where there was an incredible amount of technical detail involved as well. And, you know, that was a job that combined both aspects of construction and soft landscaping or horticultural element into a project.
Do you know how long these jobs took to complete from start to finish?
Well, the Tower of London one, from memory, they were really up against it because there's obviously a deadline that they needed to hit for it to be open. So I think that one was completed and seeded and was coming into flower within a period of around 4 months. So for a company, it was a reputation breaker if it had gone wrong. So there was a lot on the line of getting that project done correctly. With the Wisley one, I think that was, from memory, about 10 to 11 months from start to finish. So that was a long project, very involved. But again, there were lots of aspects that a lot of landscapers have to take into account, maintaining access to that facility, making sure that the health and safety around that facility whilst it was being built was up to speed and everything. So it's a long project and there's a lot that goes into building these impressive gardens.
And we know that both those projects you talked about were constructed by Lambform, who's probably one of the premier landscaping, one of the largest landscaping companies in the UK. Now, not everyone, of course, is going to be doing projects that size. Can you give us an example, you know, at the other end of the scale?
I think back to a company that is a relatively new company down in the south of England called Radial Landscapes, and that's owned by a chap called Will Burberry, who was actually one of the World Skills winners. He was European champion in his time as well. Now, he builds quite a lot of smaller-ish projects that are, again, mainly hard landscape construction. So he does a lot of patios. He does a few driveways. He does garden overbuilds. So, you know, going into a garden that is either a blank canvas or is a bit tired and with the aid of a design, the landscaper will make that garden over into something that the client finds more desirable. So these are very much simpler projects, usually running around, 8 to 10 weeks in total.
Is this a sector where it's easy for someone to set up their own business?
Yes, landscaping is commonly known as quite an easy startup. You can start a landscape business fairly easy, and in some respects, that's almost to the detriment of the professionalism of the industry. In essence, you could buy a van, buy some tools, create a website, and overnight become a landscaper. It is that simple. But what we're trying to promote to people is that it is an easy entry career. It's a very rewarding career, but it also is a career that you have to take seriously, because there are a lot of complexities to this industry that you need to be aware of. And that's why there is so much now good training and good information out there for young people, in particular, if they wish to start up. I would always recommend working with a company for a few years first to get some experience under your belt before you decided to go it alone.
So it sounds, from what you're saying, that it's a very easy sector. If you're entrepreneurial and you don't want to work for someone else, you could set up your own business. But what about if you were working for a landscape company and perhaps weren't so inclined to go out on your own? Are there progression opportunities? Can someone make it big in landscaping?
I mean, there certainly are progression opportunities within certain businesses with landscaping. It really depends on the size of the business, because as we've already alluded to, there are a lot of small businesses within the landscape sector. So, where there are only one or two man bands, or maybe three or four at a maximum. You obviously then are looking at progressional opportunities are limited if you are looking to move up the scale into director's role or something like that. However, even within those small businesses, you become a key part of that team, and you can become a team leader or project leader or something of that ilk, where you're actually running the jobs. And then there's opportunities where you may be able to then start pricing the jobs for that particular owner, or sharing that responsibility of pricing the jobs. If we use Landform again, and I don't want to keep using Landform, but it is a bigger company that does have a scale within the business where you can actually work your way up through the ranks from that business. So you could start as a landscaping operative. You could then move on to foreman. You could then work on to the sort of construction leader or horticultural lead within that business. You could then move on to procurement, or actually doing the pricing and that sort of thing within that business. There is a scalability to your role.
And that's a great example, using Landform. And we know that Landform are very active at the annual Royal Horticultural Society's Chelsea Flower Show, which is probably the world's premier gardening event. How important is that sort of event to the landscaping industry?
Chelsea Flower Show is important to the industry as a whole, not just for landscaping, but for horticulture generally. It is a showcase. It is worldwide known, worldwide renowned. For the landscaping industry, people who build at Chelsea, it becomes almost like the pinnacle of their careers. If you can manage to build at Chelsea and win any medal really now, because it's quite tough to win the medals at the RHS shows, then it shows that you're working to a standard that is just extremely high, because you've got all sorts of added pressures with working in a show garden. So it's important for the industry. It's important for those individual companies. And let's remember that there are some companies who building gardens at a flower show like Chelsea becomes an important part of their annual turnover, because they are paid to build these gardens for the sponsors. So it's a very important show, as are the other shows. I mean, the likes of Hampton Court and, of course, away from the RHS, BBC Gardeners World Live, those shows are equally as important.
Now, you spend a lot of your day working with landscapers and helping them through your role in the Association of Professional Landscapers. Perhaps let's think for a moment about what is it that gets landscapers so excited about going into a bare garden, perhaps, or a garden that really needs this makeover. What do you think it is that gets these guys motivated?
I think it's changed over the years. We have a younger generation of landscapers coming through now, even from when I started to be involved in the industry, which is, I was thinking earlier this morning, is nearly 40 years now. It used to be there was a financial element to it, you know, that you could make good money as a landscaper, and you still can. There is good money to be made within this sector if you're good. But I think now it's more, there is just so many different elements to this job now, so many new products available, so many different techniques that are available that landscapers are using, that has made it a really exciting, almost a challenge now, to build these beautiful gardens to such precision. Social media has really helped this, because you see a lot of posts on social media of all the different things that landscapers are doing, and it really drives this younger generation of landscapers forward into wanting to match or improve on what one of their peers are doing. And I use the word peers correctly, because I don't think there is a great deal of competition within this industry, because the industry is, as a community, is so interlinked. Everybody wants everyone to succeed, and so they really do share a lot of information. It's a great industry to be involved in.
I think you're absolutely right. Yes, if you're a young person coming into the sector, the best thing you can do is get a mentor from a landscaper in your own company or in another company. And as you say, they'll really help you, won't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Thinking about that then, if a young person wants to get into landscaping, and let's be completely frank about it, this is not just males anymore. You know, we've got females working in the sector as well. You know, isn't there a young woman taking part in the World Skills Competition?
Yeah, there was a young lady who didn't just take part. She actually won the World Skills Competition this year. A lady called Anna McLaughlin from Caffrey College in Ireland. And in second place was another woman called Amy Copeland, who was also from Caffrey. So, I mean, it was a real example this year of where women are not just interested in being part of this profession anymore. It's where they really are at the top of their game. And what I have to say about both those young ladies was their attention to detail and their technical ability was second to none. They were very well deserved first and second.
That's fantastic. So let's say, you know, I'm listening to this podcast, I'm getting a bit energized about becoming a landscaper. What do I do? How do I get into the landscaping game?
Well, I mean, the best route, really, I won't say the best route, probably one of the easiest routes would be to investigate the landscape businesses around your area. Now, there is a skill shortage within landscaping. We know this. And the chances are that if you contact a landscaper within your local area, have a look at them online, see what sort of work they do, make sure that it's the sort of work that you want to be involved with, and then give them a call and see if they've got any positions available. Now, they may have a position. There are some businesses out there that will take on a young person as an operative to start with. And then after a period of maybe 6-10 months, will then offer the apprenticeship. Because an apprenticeship for a business, what people quite often don't appreciate, is quite a commitment for particularly a small business. So they'll see how you get on and make sure that you're enjoying the work before you actually then get put onto your apprenticeship scheme. Now, the apprenticeship scheme, I feel, is probably the best route into the industry, because it gives you that combination of some theoretical education, but also on top of that, a lot of practical learning. And this is a practical job, so the practical learning is as important as anything else.
So we know that if you join a landscape company, obviously that company, you know, perhaps through the apprenticeship scheme or through other perhaps training methods, will enable you to develop your technical skills. But let's just think about for a moment, you know, what life skills might one need to really help develop their career? You know, sure, you've got to develop technically to become a good landscaper, but, you know, those life skills, what might one need to think about?
I mean, if we're talking generalistically on life skills, I mean, one of the most important things that any business, and this is for any job that you go for, is that you're reliable and that you're polite and courteous and your timekeeping is good and all those sort of areas. These are the core things for any job, but particularly for landscaping work. Most landscapers will tell you if the person is turning up on time every day and is keen to learn, then they're going to be a valuable employee. It's as simple as that. But the other sort of life skills, particularly with something like landscaping, whether it be landscape construction or more horticultural, you're working outside in all elements. And in the summer, it's wonderful. You've got your T-shirt on, you've got your shorts on, you're topping up your tan. There's nothing better. You know, it's a great life in the summer. But in the winter, when you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and you open those curtains and it's pouring with rain or it's sleeting or whatever, then you've really got to be motivated within that job to want to get out of bed and go and do it. And when you get there, it's really then about camaraderie and teamwork. Teamwork within this industry is vital. You really do need to be part of a team and really motivate each other within that team. And that's a really big life skill, to have that sort of camaraderie with your peers around you.
You say you spent 40 years in horticulture. How much of that has been sort of specifically working with the landscaping sector?
Well, it's approaching almost half that now. I started off as a grower. I mean, I trained as a grower. I wanted to be a farmer, believe it or not. My grandparents were farmers. That avenue didn't open up as easily as horticulture did for me. So I went into growing, and I've moved around the country. I'm currently down in Cornwall, where I was from, but I've moved all the way up to Newcastle upon Tyne and worked there. I've worked in the Midlands. I've worked right down in the south of England. So this career choice of horticulture has enabled me to move into growing, into garden centre retail, into sales, and then into landscaping as well. So you can transfer skills around this industry very easily, and it can take you wherever you want it to. There's just so many opportunities.
And what's been the best day for you in the landscaping industry? Can you think of one particular day that's been outstanding? You thought, wow, this is fantastic.
Well, I have to be honest, and it is the best day, but I don't know if it's particularly for the right reasons. I mean, the APL have an awards ceremony, and every year on around March the 15th, we get 500 landscapers, designers and horticulturalists all together in one room, and we celebrate the skills and the abilities of our members. And to me, that is almost the best day of the year every year. It's a great day to catch up with people, but also just to see what they have achieved and to see how they enjoy what they've achieved and put forward for the awards.
Look, I've been at these events, and I think the reason why you're saying that it's the best day of the year for you is because, you know, you stand up on that stage and everyone gives you a fantastic round of applause for the excellent work you're doing for the landscape industry. Honestly, it makes you feel good, doesn't it, Phil?
It does, yeah. No, it is a great day. But I have to say as well, the World Skills Days are very good, you know, where you see these young people achieve, you know, the World Skills competition itself, where you're only given 16 hours to build a garden, you know, halfway through, when you see them overcome some of the issues, you know, and they do that independently and they get through that. Those are really pleasing times as well. There are loads of really good days within this industry, to be fair.
Phil, thanks very much for giving us a really good insight into how someone might develop a career in the landscape industry. And thanks for, you know, on behalf of all those landscapers out there, for all your support that you are giving to the sector. It's really great. And, you know, it's good to have people like yourself that are, you know, real advocates for the landscape industry. And we look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you, Neville. It's been a pleasure.
My thanks to Phil Tremaine from the Association of Professional Landscapers. If you'd like to learn more about Phil's organisation, or indeed landscaping in general, then please click on the link in our show notes.